Hey, it's Jeff and Jeremy from the Ultra Running Guys. And if you're here, you probably already know that we started this podcast to help you take your next step in your ultra running journey.
And we just wanted to take a moment to say thank you and let you know how much we appreciate you being part of the Ultra Running Guys community, because we know there are a million other ways you could choose to spend this time.
We love hearing from you. We're always trying to improve. So if you have guest suggestions or feedback, hit us up through social media or reach out to us at theultrarunningguys@gmail.com.
And again, thanks for plugging in. And with that, enjoy the episode. And remember, when in doubt, just show up. All right, here we go. And welcome back to the Ultra Running Guys. You got Jeremy Reynolds and Jeff Winchester of the Ultra Running Guys. And the reason that we're here is to help you take your next step in your ultra running journey. So if you've been with us, we started a show in 2020, primarily doing interview type shows, and it's been fantastic. However, a big part of taking your next step is figuring out what those goals are and what races you want on the calendar. So a little while back, we started the Race Spotlight series, and tonight is going to be a good one. We've talked 50 milers, we've talked 100 Ks, we've talked 100 milers, and this one you've heard on the show if you've been listening, and it's a little bit of a beast, and we're excited about it. Why don't you tell us what we're going to be talking about?
Oh my gosh, do I have to tell them? No, so that was a great intro, by the way. But yeah, like you said, today's Race Spotlight is one hell of a big step. So yep. If you've taken steps before, you could take a 50K, you can do a 100K, whatever it is, but perhaps we're going to talk about doing a 250. And so tonight we're going to talk about the Cocodona 250. And the race splashed onto the scene in 2021. It was a brand new race started by Aravaipa Running. And they have just exploded with this race and is very, very popular. A lot of runners, like Jeremy said, we've interviewed on our show that have been a part of it. The race is 250 miles, obviously, with the name. It has 125 hours to finish, and the overall elevation is over 40,000 feet of gain.
It's a big one.
It's a lot. But you got 250 miles to do it in, so you can spread it out a little bit. There is 35,000 feet, roughly, of loss through that same process, and you basically cover all of Arizona and check out everything that's cool about Arizona, which you love because you're from that area. Or at least your family is. And so tonight we are going to talk to the race director, Steve Adderholt, who is obviously, like I said, the race director of the Cocodona 250. And so, Steve, we want to welcome you to our show.
Thanks, Jeff and Jeremy. I appreciate being on the show. Yeah.
Well, at first, I want to give a shout out. We had Jamil on a couple episodes back talking about Black Canyons. One of the things we talked about with him is just really what you guys do for the community, just Aravaipa as a whole. And true to that, as soon as we got done, he said, hey, I want to plug you in with some of the, you know, the other people in our organization. Cocodona, like I said, has been a big focus. So this is really exciting for us. But look, the purpose of this is if somebody's listening and they're thinking, one day, or I think I'm ready, Cocodona 250, right? What do I need to know to decide if it's the right race for me and how to tackle it? So we're going to kind of go through that. But one of the things that we really love to hear first is, as the race director, what is your favorite thing about the Cocodona 250?
Well, okay. I'm going to phrase my answer and not necessarily about Cocodona specifically, and although that's what we're talking about tonight, but more so the distance in general, you know, the 200 mile distance, it breaks you down mentally and physically, and it brings your emotions right to the surface, you know, which, I mean, it can feel bad, but I think it also feels really good to let your walls down from time to time and be raw and open. And so, you know, it takes you there. And that this distance provides you with, you know, so many high highs and low lows. And I think it gives you a lot of perspective in life, way more so than I would say 100 miler does. And so the race I love, it's beautiful, it's challenging. I love the towns that we go through. You know, hopefully we get to talk about all that. But my favorite thing is just the length, the duration, the time you have with your crew, time you have with your pacers, the time that you're broken down and you feel like you can't go any further, and you know, and you do, and you make it to the finish line, and what it provides you. So it's the distance is what gives you all those gifts.
That just scares me.
Nah. I mean, so it's obviously a big step, and we'll talk at the end about some of the other options that you guys offer, because I think it sounds like a beautiful course and there's other ways to experience it. But so we talked about 2021. This was the third year we've had a couple guests like Andy Glaze. We've watched him every year kind of take on the course. Mm-hmm. And so what do you think it is that brings people back? I'm sure there's been some changes as you guys have figured out kind of this newer format, but what do you think brings people back to Coca Dona?
Man, that's a good question. There are so many great races out there. And it blows me away that we've had five runners that have completed it all 3 years that we've done the race and are signed up again for a fourth year. So five runners, running with us for four times. And many, many runners come back multiple times to run with us. I think every race has its own personality. And as I alluded to, the Coca Dona definitely has beauty on the course. It's definitely has its challenge. But I would like to think that the runners experience a lot of love at Coca Dona. We're very, very focused. The staff and all the volunteers are focused on giving the runners the best possible experience they can. And I do think that filters down and is felt by, the runners, the crew, their pacers, by everybody. So I would say the community and the love, which, maybe sounds more touchy and feely than you would think for a 250 mile race.
We like touchy feeling,
but
kind of,
and I'm sure we'll get into it, but it's got some, Jeff said in the beginning, most of Arizona, I saw your face kind of go, well, I don't know, most of Arizona, but it touches, from being familiar between Prescott and Sedona and Jerome. And just some of the big areas, you're going to see a lot of different things. And so I think that also has to be appealing. Having not been out there, but familiar with a lot of those specific areas. But let's ask this. 250 miles is a lot to kind of figure out, right? But what do you think it is, if you had to nail something down, is there anything that runners tend to underestimate as they're planning for Coca Dona?
Well, in terms of underestimate specifically for Coca Dona, I think they would underestimate the first 33 miles. It's, you start in the Sonoran Desert at a fairly low elevation in Black Canyon City, and you're going all the way up to Crown King, which is pretty high up in the Bradshaw Mountains. And it's really rough, really rugged. In that first 33 miles, you have 11,000 feet of gain and 6,000 feet of loss. And like the footing's loose and there's no shade. And it's usually in the mid to high 80s. And there's not many aid stations there because it's so rugged and there's really no roads in there. And so you're on your own. I think that's probably what they underestimate the most of this course. And people pay for it for underestimating that.
One of the things that I like about the race description on the website is actually you actually have all these sections broken out. You just touched on the first section as well. And so like if somebody's considering doing your race or they've signed up, they can go there and kind of get a breakdown of each of these sections that you just talked about. When you look at each of these, you just talked about the one area they underestimate. What do you think is the highlight of those sections? Like what is your favorite one?
Oh, man. Jeff, do you have kids?
I do. They're older.
Which is your favorite kid, Jeff?
Well, since they don't listen to the podcast, it's actually...
Yeah, right. I knew that was like... Yeah. Bluff.
Man, that it's so hard. It's so hard to pick one section because they're all, we go through so many different ecosystems and small towns. And so I'm going to pick two and not give you one, but running through Jerome is really cool. It's a tiny town perched on the side of a cliff. It's an old mining town, and you go right by the Verde mine and look into the mine from above. And then as you run by it, that's really cool. The history of Jerome and that's a really cool place. And then running through Sedona, we have a huge stretch where you're running through and in the big rock, red rock monolith walls of Sedona. And it's a very spectacular place. If you've never seen it and run through it, you can't wrap your mind around how beautiful it is. And so, yeah, that's got to be the other one.
Sedona is phenomenal. It has been one of the, like you said, one of my favorite places that I've ever run. However, I think everybody that we've talked to from Cocodona went through there at night. so they were like, "The one, you know, I was so looking forward to seeing Sedona." And then of course it's night. But I've also heard about that first stretch you talked about. And so I think, so for people listening from a tactical perspective, right? One is plan for it to be hard, but two, mentally, when you're halfway through that section, you're thinking, I just started this 250 mile race. How the heck is this going to happen? Just knowing that, okay, this is kind of a, you know, a punch in the face to start, but
you're done with a 50K at that point.
That's right. And I've heard people coin it, you know, one of the hardest 50Ks I've ever run, but just knowing that it's not all like that. And that there, you know, are some more enjoyable parts. That said, and maybe it's there, where do you guys see the most drops? If I'm planning for this race and I'm trying to make some mental notes of like, okay, where are my traps, right? What do I want to make sure mentally I can get through, because this is the one that gets people?
Yeah. The every year, the most number of drops we have is at the Crown King aid station, which is, you can't officially drop from mile 33, which is Lane Mountain aid station, which is the end of that really hard first stretch. So the first crew access aid station where you can, you know, where you're supposed, the first your place you're supposed to be able to drop is at Crown King, mile 37. That's always where we see the most number of drops. It's just a really hard section. But once you get through that, you know, it's it's not easy, but it's a little bit easier than that. But yeah, we always see the most at Crown King. Pretty much it's, other than Crown King, it's pretty consistent. The first 125 miles, it's 10-ish runners every aid station. And pretty, like I said, pretty consistent every aid station for the first 125 miles. After that, hardly anybody drops.
Let me ask, because I'm curious, Crown King is... Are people coming up against a cutoff at all? Is the cutoff aggressive because that section's so hard, or is it more of a mental, just, I don't know that I can do this?
There are people that get cut off. The cutoff is 11:55 PM. So basically midnight. You start at 5 AM and the cutoff is midnight to do 37 miles, which seems ridiculous, but it's a pretty ridiculous section. Some people do get cut off, but most people just underestimate. They blow up because it's too hot. They feel like they can't go on because they feel defeated after that first section. But I mean, my advice to everybody is run that first section, or, you know, run quote unquote, hike that first section. And we do an official training run on that section, to get runners prepared for that section prior to the race. And then just hike it, just hike the whole thing, and, you know, bring an umbrella, carry as much water as you possibly can, just take it easy, because, you know, if you don't, it's going to hurt. But then also, once you get to Crown King, don't give up, because, you know, you've just gotten over the hardest, you know, hump of the race. And it's not all coasting after that, but you may feel like there's no way you can go on, but you definitely can if you just keep going.
That is absolutely fascinating to me.
Yep.
Like it's the main place that people drop. Now, it does make sense that after 125, most people don't drop from the race, or a lot less people do, unless I'm sure there's an injury or something to that effect. But from a mental side, that's insane to me. Like, it's so early, but it makes a lot of sense.
It makes sense though. If you're suffering early and you're trying to wrap your head around, I have this much race. So anybody's listening, right? To me, like, the takeaway, if it's me and I'm preparing, it's just, look, no matter what, don't drop it, Crown King. No matter how I feel, move forward and make a decision from there, because hopefully that'll be just what you need to, you know, have it soften a little bit and keep moving. But easier said than done, I'm sure.
Yeah, I mean, that's right. You know, up until mile 78, it gets a little easier, but not a whole lot easier. And you really don't have another... You don't see your crew again until mile 78. So yeah, and you're going into the nighttime and it's really cold in the Bradshaws as well. So I wouldn't play a mind game with myself if I was a runner that, okay, I'm done with the hard, you know, and right. if that's over, because it's definitely not. It's definitely not at all.
Well, it's interesting because you just said that it's at mile 37 is when they drop. And we're assuming mentally here, or on our side, not even mentally, but on our side, we're assuming that's because they're just, the effort's been exerted so much, right? And they just can't believe how hard that was. But when you just said that the next aid station that they have crew access is 41 miles later, that would play a riddle on my head as well, because it's like, I'm not going to see anybody again for 41 miles. I got to go down to the night. And so that definitely would challenge on how I would perceive where I was in the race as well, because then you're looking, like you said, 78 miles. So at the Crown King aid station, do you prepare your volunteers in such a way that encourages them to help encourage runners to get the heck out, to keep moving forward?
Yeah, at every aid station, the volunteers are trained and, you know, encouraged to, you know, they are there at the race, and all of us are there at the race to make sure as many runners finish as possible. So I wouldn't say necessarily at Crown King specifically, but every volunteer is, you know, trained and hit over the head with, do everything you can to get them out of the aid station. If, you know, if safety isn't a concern, yeah.
I want to talk about aid stations and crew access, because you kind of touched on it, but you also said one other thing that I thought could potentially come up when we asked about what do people underestimate, because most people are going to think Arizona hot, and you just mentioned how cold it can get. And I remember seeing Ray Sanchez and Andy Glaze, some of those videos, they'd, you know, and they're on a cot just shivering, kind of bantering back and forth. And I would imagine that you go, oh my gosh, extreme, it can be extreme heat, but then the cold. And so what do people need to know about the weather, and I'm sure the gear that comes along with it, from a planning perspective?
Yeah. This course is hard. The desert is a rough environment, because just what you said, it gets hot during the day and cold at night. And we drop down to 3,000 foot elevation, and during the day it's hot in those sections. So your first 33 miles, or, you know, 28 miles is low at that low elevation and really hot. And then all through the Verde Valley, so that's, you know, basically kind of the Sedona area, is also low of elevation and really hot during the day. But anytime you're up at elevation, which there are kind of five major zones where you're up at elevation. And the highest point is, over 9,000 feet. So, you know, you're definitely hidden elevation as well. At night, it's very cold, you know, in the desert, it can be cold anywhere at night, but definitely up at elevation. At the highest point of the course is within the last 10 miles of the finish line. And at night, you know, it's getting down well below freezing, and it's usually whipping winds at night. So last year we had, you know, with the wind chill, that was below zero. So wow. It's a pretty extreme environment. So yeah. Am I painting this as a picture that people are going to want to sign up for, or are we just
challenging ultra runners? Is exactly what you're supposed to do.
Yeah. I mean, yeah.
This is the point of it, because otherwise I will watch, you know, your slick videos that you put out, and I'm thinking, this looks like a cakewalk. Right. And the purpose of this is really to inform runners that are thinking about this as a step, is what you want to do to be prepared, both, you know, mentally, physically, and everything, to take everything into consideration. And so, no, I mean, if it's scaring somebody, then that's the right level of fear that they need to approach it with, and a healthy fear. And I think that's appropriate for what you're saying.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. But you did mention gear, and I skipped over that and just hit the weather, but we do have required gear that runners have to carry through the entire course. It's kind of the standard required gear. And then we have additional locations where we check additional gear. And that's really for those, you know, colder sections that people have to have additional gear. And so, you know, if you're carrying the right gear, you should, right. You should be fine. Not to say that it'll always be enjoyable, but, should be able to do it.
Well, and I'm sure that you guys put out a great list and all that, but I think really the take home for people listening, right, is anytime, and really we've actually talked quite a bit about 200s. And I think anytime you get into that, it really changes the dynamic on how you have to plan, what you have to take into consideration, right? I mean, we're about to talk aid stations, and while I've heard fantastic things about your aid stations, if you're used to an aid station every 3 to 5 miles, this is going to be a different experience, right? And so this is just a matter of, hey, how do I face it? How do I prepare? And then if they're paying attention, I'm sure, to what you guys are putting out, you know, if you're listening, take that in, or if you're watching, take that in, because it's, I'm sure it's very important to the success of the race. But it looks like a blast, you know? So let's transition to that. Aid stations. I've heard fantastic things about the food. We also just mentioned that, hey, there's a place where, you know, from a crew access, it may be 40 miles, those types of things. So let's talk about the aid stations. How, you know, the how many, how far apart, what's the furthest apart, what can people expect, those types of items.
Yeah. Like, I kind of break the course into two parts when I'm talking about aid stations and crew access. So the first 78 miles are through the, you know, from the Sonoran Desert into and through the Bradshaw Mountains. And it's a very rugged stretch of the course with not a lot of access. And so that's kind of the first, you know, part, of the course that I divided into. And then the second, all the rest of the aid stations after mile 78 are very accessible, for crews. They're easy to drive to. You don't need, you know, a four-wheel drive car. So, so that's, you know, a nice benefit in that between aid station 1 and 2. So between mile 8 and 33, there are 2 water drops that we have where you can take 1 liter, because we got to haul that water in with a mule, because there are no roads. You know, you're on a road. It's a road, quote unquote, that you're on, but you can't drive on it. But so that, you know, that second stretch from aid station 2 to 3 is 25 miles. And that's by far the furthest. After that, on average, they're about 10 to 12 miles. And so it's pretty good spacing. And then, you know, we've already talked about it, but you get that first crew access aid station at mile 33 at Crown King, which is an awesome little, I'll say town, but it's a saloon, a general store, and a couple of, you know, a few homes. So, but it is a really cool place to visit. But, you know, that's mile 33, so you get your crew there and you get them again at 78. After that, almost every aid station is a crew access aid station, and like I said, they're easy to get to. So it really is kind of two different beasts, that first 78 miles and then the, you know, all the miles after that.
Can somebody run your race without a crew?
Has someone run it?
Let me rephrase my question. Would you recommend somebody run the race without a crew?
Well, yes, if you are into that sort of thing, if you want that challenge, you know, people definitely do it. And, you know, I pride myself that we are very gracious with drop bags. You know, very many of the aid stations, you can have drop bags. We have sleep stations. And so because you have drop bags, you can put in, you can have a sleeping bag, and many of the sleep stations are inside, so they're heated. And the, you know, the food that we offer at aid stations is, I think, really great. So yes, you can do the race without, you know, crew or pacers. So yes, that's my answer. However, personally, I think part of the beauty of this distance and races in general are, you know, the time spent, and the, you know, the bonding that you have with your crew and your pacers. And on this race, in a race of this distance, your crew is hanging out together a lot without you. And, you know, they have a lot of time to hang out. So, you know, the time that you're spending with those folks, creating memories, I think is really valuable. So I personally wouldn't want to do it without pacers and crew.
That's a great answer. It goes with your byline too, right? Adventure awaits.
Yeah. And so I'm going to give a couple quick shout outs, because I'm sure while there's not much or some areas that don't have any cell service, those types of things, we were lucky enough, actually, during this year, we have a Patreon group, and Steve Epifano, I'm going to give him a shout out, because he actually called in to our Patreon call when he was at like mile 77 or 80 somewhere in there. So he found a spot where he had service, and that was super cool. Because
we basically ran Cocodona that day.
Yeah, that was cool to be talking to him while he's on the course. So shout out to Steve. But one more, and it made me think about when we're talking about aid stations. West Plate, he was a guest of ours. And if you're thinking about taking on, like, you know, the Cocodona or really any kind of big race, he was so valuable in tips and different things about this distance. But him talking about the aid stations and just taking the time to kind of relish and enjoy and connect with people. So if you're thinking about this distance, I highly recommend you go check out that episode. So, and this is actually something we talked to Wes about, and I know we're getting a little bit tight on time, but this is a different kind of race. Like I mentioned, right? I'm sure there are times you find yourself out in the middle of the desert by yourself. There's things that you don't typically think about when you're doing, you know, 50K, 50 mile, maybe 100 mile. What are some of the different considerations, right? Like animals or just
snakes,
right?
Snakes.
What are some things that people should know that's like, hey, this is going to be a little bit of a different experience for you?
I think it's probably if you're new to the 200 mile distance, it's to take it slow, to sleep, to enjoy it. Don't push too hard. Hike on this race specifically, hike that first 33 mm-hmm. miles. You know, take care of yourself in the heat, take care of your feet. That's a huge thing. It, you know, when I've, you know, run this distance, pretty much any chance I can, every aid station, I'm cleaning my feet, changing my socks every time I can. So, taking care of your feet is a big one. I could tell you like all of the considerations along the entire course and the animals that you might encounter, but I mean, basically the name of the game is keep going, just keep going.
Keep moving. They're less likely to eat you.
Run from the mountain lions, I say. real quick, when somebody has decided at this point, they definitely want to run your race, right? And you have convinced them that this is their next big step, right? Are there any qualifying requirements to get into it?
No, at this point, we don't have any qualifiers, no volunteer requirement. Right now, there's no lottery. It's first come, first serve. We haven't yet sold out. We probably will hit cap for, you know, all three of the race distances this year. We're closing in on those, but we still have room for more registrations. But I'd expect next year it to sell out faster. But no qualifiers, just go sign up.
Well, let's talk about that since you touched on it. You do have two other distances. You have the Sedona 125 and the Elvin Crest 38, which when you listed your two favorite sections, you said Jerome and Sedona, which I think the Sedona 125 touches both of those. So that's, a win if you want to just do the Sedona 125. Why do you guys offer both those distances now? Because neither of those were offered on year one or year two, I believe.
Yeah. From the start, the vision for Cocodona was multiple race distances. We'll end up with five race distances over the 5 days of the race. It's actually 5 days, 5 hours, but, five races, 5 days, and just a celebration of the beauty of Central Arizona and the history and trail running. So it's always been in the cards, but you know, you don't take off more than you can chew that first couple of years. So we just stuck with the 250 that those first couple of years, and the 250 will always be, you know, the main event. And we hope to, in the next couple of weeks, be putting out our fourth race distance. So yeah.
For this year. So for 2024, the fourth distance will be available.
Yes.
Do you want to tell us what that distance will be? Are you not allowed to yet?
I don't know that it's not allowed. We just haven't been. It's somewhere between the 125 distance and the 38 mile distance.
Sounds great.
Awesome. And so when this releases, I would say absolutely go check, because we're recording on December 5th. And so you guys have really just dropped in the last few days. you know, some cool videos about the Sedona 125 and about the 38 mile distance. And so go look at those. I mean, they look so fun. At some point though, I'm going to have to get out there. My mom lives in Prescott. Her birthday's on May 4th. And so it's like, it'd be the perfect opportunity. Right. But, dude, I really appreciate what, again, you guys do AeroVipe as a whole, but I've heard so many good things about you personally and your team for the Coca Dona. So if anybody's listening, just take the time, check it out. We'll definitely be putting the specific links down below. But dude, we appreciate your time so much and what you do for this community.
Well, thank you for having me on. You know, we're all, it is a great community and it's actually a pretty small community. The trail running community is, and yeah, I'm happy to be a part of it because everybody's so giving and so good. So yeah, thanks for having me on.
Yeah. You guys are doing some incredible things out there and we just appreciate you and what you are all about tremendously. So thank you for that.
Yeah. We're huge on community. Our kind of tagline is just show up. And, you know, again, that along with taking your next step really just plays into, and for everybody plugging in, if this is your first time, first of all, welcome. Hopefully you got some value out of this. Go check out AeroVipe and what these guys are doing. But also, like I said, we've got a show just where we have interview style every 2 weeks. We'd love to have you plug in for that. And if you've been with us for a while, you've heard us talk a lot about these 200 plus mile distances. And they're actually some of the kind of the most popular conversations we have, because I think people are really understanding that there's just so much for people to learn about themselves in this format.
So really, as Steve said, it will fully break you down more than 100. So why wouldn't you?
Well, yeah, it's the depth of the experience, mm-hmm. and you know, the perspective you get when you're so low, just keep going, man. And I not just it. In races.
Yeah. I like that a lot, man. I like that a lot.
And if you're thinking I can never do that, go listen to our recent episode with Matt and Paul Murray, because they essentially just got up and did it. And when they still don't consider themselves runners. And, you know, this format is a little bit different when you think about how you can manage it. Yeah, but
for sure.
Anyways, we appreciate so much the time, and Steve, we'll be in touch. But thanks again, and to everybody else, we'll talk soon. And
cuts. All right, listen, thank you so much. We recognize the fact that you are probably just hanging on just for a couple more minutes as you're finishing up your run. But really, we do want to give you a huge thank you for the constant support that you've shown us. We hear you and we feel you. And the best way for us to continue to grow is for you to share us with your friends. Tell them what you put in your ears when you're out there on a long run. Hit the like button, leave us a comment, leave a review, and give us some direct feedback on what you like about the show and also what you don't like. We're here to improve and do it for you.
And it really means the world. And listen, if you would like to support financially, you can connect with us on Patreon at patreon.com/theultrarunningguys, or you can use the support link in the show notes. Any and all support goes directly back into growing the show and helping us get better at what we love to do, which is to serve all of you. And with that, finish up that run, get cleaned up, and just show up.
Clean.
Clean.